Kanai had detached indifference as the Mongol invader bullied its way through the pitiful floating wreckage of the police helicopter. He felt no guilt about erasing 12 men from the earth in less than 10 seconds. He turned his attention to the two Coast Guard cutters approaching the LNG tanker on opposite sides of her great hull. Before he could give the order to his Viper teams to launch missiles against the cutters, they both opened fire simultaneously with 25mm Bushmaster guns mounted on their bows. Kanai threw himself to the deck as the rounds slashed through the bridge, taking out the windows and ripping into the control console. The Viper at the helm was killed instantly. Kanai looked up through the shattered windows. The invader was less than a mile from passing under the bridge. He noticed that the bow was swinging slightly to starboard. Shot to pieces, the computerized navigation console was unable to send a course command to the rudder. He called down to the engine room. "Report damage. Gunfire has disabled the port generator, but the engines are untouched. I have one man dead and one badly wounded." Kanai saw that the tanker was beginning to veer out of the channel toward a buoy. "The bridge controls are shot away. Helm the ship from down there. Bring her back on course 355 to port, or we'll collide with a bridge span." He crawled out on the bridge wing and peered down. A Viper leaned over the starboard railing and fired missiles point-blank onto the bow of the Coast Guard cutter Timothy Firm. The first passed through the hull, exploding in the water. The other exploded against a bulwark and sent shredded steel cascading across the deck and cutting down the men manning the 25mm Bushmaster. Pieces of the gun flew in the sky like burning leaves. Then the air on the opposite side of the Mongol invader was torn apart as another missile bored into the funnel of the William Shea. It struck like a giant hammer, heeling the ship 10 degrees and sending out a huge spray of debris and a cloud of dense black smoke. But the lone Bushmaster still peppered away at the hull surrounding the Mongol invader's engine room. A second missile slammed into the Timothy Firm. Her hull trembled, and flames burst out of her stern. An instant later, another plowed into her superstructure below the bridge. She lost headway and began to fall away from the LNG tanker, afire in two places, badly crippled and drifting helplessly. Kanai had achieved the tactical advantage. There would be no further worry from surface ships. Unable to assess the harm to the Timothy Firm on the other side of the Mongol invader, but assuming the worst, Admiral Dover ordered the only officer of the Firm still standing to turn the cutter toward the nearest shore and ground her. The last throw of the dice, Dover thought grimly. Clutching the radio, he ordered in the 3 Air National Guard F-16C fighters that had assembled and were circling a few miles out to sea. He instinctively ducked as a missile from the LNG tanker flashed in front of the bridge and burst harmlessly in the water 100 yards beyond. Then he changed the frequency on his radio and said slowly, distinctly, "Blue flight, blue flight, this is Red Fleet. If you hear and understand me, attack the LNG tanker. Repeat, attack the ship. But for God's sake, don't strike the tanks containing the propane." The Blue Flight leader sent his 2 wingmen in, one 500 yards behind the other, while he circled to observe the results of the strike and follow up should his lead planes miss the target. The first pilot banked and dropped in an almost vertical dive. But a split second before he could press his fire switch, a surface-to-air missile fired from the tanker blasted his F-16 into a giant, fiery pyre. "Break off!" shouted the flight leader to the second aircraft. "Too late," broke in the pilot. "I'm locked on." He spoke no more. Another missile belched from its launcher, and his plane exploded into a second fireball. The flight leader pilot was too paralyzed with shock to launch another attack. He turned his aircraft away from the death and destruction and flew back to the National Guard field on Long Island. Dover watched the destruction of the two aircraft in stunned horror. Then he straightened, as one of the small 35-foot Coast Guard rescue boats abruptly shot across the water at full speed in the direction of the stern of the Mongol invader. The crew, clutching their life vests, spilled over the sides as the boat's skipper gripped the helm and kept his bow on a straight, undeviating course toward the huge ship. Suicide, Dover thought wonderingly. Pure suicide. But God bless him. Small arms fire erupted from the invader and whined around the young man at the helm. Splashes seemed to cover every inch of the water around the thin fiberglass hull. The little red, white, and blue ensign flew stiff in the morning breeze. Just when it looked like the skipper was about to leap clear of the cockpit, a spray of bullets stitched him across the chest, and he fell backward onto the work deck. "They'll never stop her now," Pitt said, gazing through a pair of binoculars at the big ship, doggedly heading for Manhattan and her rendezvous with devastation. "She's about 1,000 yards from the bridge," judged Flett. "Just time enough for us to cut in, submerge, and go for her screws and rudders." From Giordino's point of view, it would be a near thing. "We'll only get one pass. Miss, and we'll never be able to circle and come at her again. Her speed is too great.